2 weeks of testimony wrapped up at the Foreign Interference Inquiry last week after hearing from MPs, officials from political parties, intelligence officers, and even the Prime Minister himself. The Inquiry Commission is looking into possible foreign interference in the 2019 and 2021 elections and how the government shares information and acts against possible threats. I'm Dave Breckenridge, and this is 10-3. National Post politics reporter Catherine Levesque joins me to discuss what the inquiry heard about Chinese interference, how the intelligence community viewed possible outside threats, and how the Prime Minister's office handled information. Don't forget you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music. I'd love it if you could leave us a rating, a review, and tell your friends about the show. So, Catherine, we just wrapped a couple of weeks of testimony at the Foreign Interference Inquiry. And before we get to the revelations that came out of that testimony, and there was a lot to cover, really, but refresh listeners' memories, what sparked this whole inquiry?
Oh, goodness. It was a number of media leaks, mainly in the Globe and Mail and Global News. So that started in November 2022. So we've been talking a lot about foreign interference since then for, you know, the last more than a year and a half, actually. There were many revelations and allegations at the time. There were, you know, lots of talk about a network of candidates in the GTA that were given, you know, $250,000 during the 2019 election. So that was a big allegation at the time. There were also, you know, lots of talk about he's still an MP, but he's now independent, Han Dong, and, you know, irregularities around his nomination, you know, buses of students going to his nomination to vote for him. So a lot of questions around that. Ultimately, you know, as we might remember, he was, he left the Liberal caucus because there were some allegations that are now pretty much unfounded, but, you know, where allegedly he had asked a Chinese diplomat to hold on to the two Michaels in China. He now says he's never said that. In fact, he was actually advocating for their release. And there was also a lot of talk about the 2021 election because, and especially the concerted effort by China to discredit certain candidates from the Conservative Party of Canada, including Kenny Chu in BC. So, you know, those are only some of the revelations that we had heard of. So really, I think the goal of the inquiry was to look at what happened specifically in the 2019 and 2022 elections, try to weed out, you know, everything that happened and these allegations that came out in those media reports.
Mm-hmm. And, it, you know, as mentioned, there's plenty of talk about interference in this newspaper, other media outlets, Global and the Globe and Mail. Before the inquiry and kind of sparking the inquiry, what did we hear that aligned with what had previously been reported? Did a lot of that past reporting get stood up, as it were, by testimony?
Well, actually kind of confirmed a lot of what we knew. And, you know, I'm happy to talk a little bit about each part, really. So there are actually suspicions that there was actually a network in the Greater Toronto Area, you know, more specifically of 11 candidates, both Liberal and Conservative, but also 13 staff members who were, you know, given some money, sometimes unknowingly. So I'll be honest, we didn't get a lot of detail on this because we had access to, you know, just a minuscule portion, actually, of documents, and they were heavily censored. So we saw that this was on CSIS's radar, our spy agency. You know, they were aware of this. They had a lot of suspicions, but we didn't get hard, cold facts. Just the fact that there was, you know, this information out there, and people were aware that this was possibly something that was happening. With regard to Han Dong, he actually went at the inquiry. He was questioned at length. And there were, in fact, some, you know, red flags around his nomination. You know, he admitted that there were, in fact, some buses that came to his nomination. You know, his own campaign paid for seniors to be bused at his nomination, which is, frankly, not uncommon. I mean, a lot of candidates do that. You know, they provide transportation for people to come vote for them, right? But what was a little irregular about this, and you know, and I know Justin Trudeau, and we'll get into that, but Mr. Trudeau completely dismissed that. But what was highlighted in the inquiry is that there was a bus of international students that actually voted for Han Dong. So they're not Canadian citizens, but according to the Liberal Party, they can still vote in a nomination process. And it was a little weird because no one knew who had paid for this bus to come vote for Han Dong. They were Mandarin-speaking international students, you know, so were they even in Han Dong's riding? So there, this really raised a lot more questions about his whole nomination process. And finally, I mean, we got some proof that actually, you know, in many instances in Ottawa, CSIS, but also a bunch of other intelligence agencies, but also senior public servants, they were all aware that there were suspicions, basically, that China was trying to interfere in the 2021 election, but especially to discredit certain, the conservatives generally, but also in specific ridings. So that China was actively supporting candidates who they saw as pro-China, and they were discrediting candidates that they saw as anti-China. And that really had to do with Erin O'Toole, that had to do with Kenny Chu and a number of other candidates who ultimately lost. The conservatives, as we know, lost the election, but, you know, Kenny Chu and many others also lost their riding. So they're aware. The Conservative Party found out, you know, later that they found out, in fact, during this process, that actually people were aware during the 2021 election. But, you know, as we'll discuss, I'm sure this information didn't really get to the party in time for them to actually do anything about this.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we will get to that in a moment. But first, the notion of Canada's intelligence agencies and federal senior civil servants, obviously what would have been reported on before was sourced from leaks, as you mentioned, and information that outlets kind of got through back channels or what have you. But we actually got to hear from Canada's intelligence agencies at the inquiry, correct? What did they testify to?
I think, you know, I'll go to the director of CSIS. He actually came two times to the inquiry. And basically, he's been saying that a lot of what has been coming out, you know, more generally, the fact that there is foreign interference, the fact that China especially is trying to interfere in our elections and, you know, influence our politics, you know, some will argue unsuccessfully. He said he's been telling, you know, the PMO, the Prime Minister directly about this, the government, for years. And his, you know, his message has always been the same. So, you know, he's saying, well, for people to allege that they weren't aware that this was happening, I mean, this is false. You know, there were some very interesting tidbits, in fact, in some of the documents that we saw, you know, the little from what we saw, including the fact that Canada is seen apparently by China and maybe other foreign interference actors as being low risk and high reward because, you know, very few people are going to be prosecuted as a result of their actions, you know, with regard to foreign interference, that, you know, basically Canada is an easy target for foreign interference. And really, I think what we saw with this inquiry is that, you know, there are a lot of mechanisms to kind of monitor foreign interference. I mean, I think a lot of this, to be fair, was put in place by the Liberal government, because, you know, they were concerned with what had happened in the 2016 U.S. election, also possible interference by France. So, you know, they really put a bunch of mechanisms to kind of monitor any possible threats. You know, among them, we've heard about the security and intelligence threats to elections task force, which I'll refer to as SITE task force. There's also the Rapid Response Mechanism Canada. So that's an instance within global affairs to kind of monitor any, basically any media reports or, you know, any effects of, basically to identify and respond to threats to democracy. But there's also the Critical Election Incident Public Protocol. So that's a bunch of senior public servants, which during the election will actually look at all those threats and determine if there should be a public announcement. Basically, if they should notify the public if there is indeed a threat to fair and free elections. And what we've seen is that in the past two elections, yes, there were some things happening, but nothing that actually met that threshold, which had them basically tell the public of what was happening. So I think what we've heard, to answer your question, from CSIS, but also other intelligence agencies, is that people were aware that things were happening, that there were all these allegations going on, but it didn't reach the level of threshold for them to actually tell the public about it, similar to, let's say, what France did a few years ago when they said, well, Russia is actually interfering in our elections. They're attempting to. Canada did not do that. And now we're kind of stuck in a situation where, you know, mostly the Conservative Party is saying, well, we were not aware of this. We were kept in the dark. And a number of other parties are saying the same.
Yeah, I mean, I did want to touch on that. Like, so we have the intelligence apparatus in Canada raising flags with the PMO, saying that there are potential for interference. There is interference happening, but none of the other parties are being notified. Is that what they were suggesting at the inquiry, that basically, you know, we were in the dark about this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because, and you know, to be fair, the information also didn't seem to flow very well between all the instances that I was talking about. So like the site task force, the critical election protocol, you know, those senior public servants, the rapid response mechanism, like it seems like information wasn't always flowing between those instances, but it also didn't make it to the political parties. So, you know, for instance, we heard during the hearings from the former campaign directors from the Liberals, the NDP, but also the Conservatives. And they said, well, we had no idea that our intelligence apparatus was aware that there were that China was trying to interfere and that they were favoring or helping Canada's that they saw as pro-China and trying to dissuade voters, Chinese voters, to vote for people that they saw as anti-China. So there was certainly a lot of frustration on the part of the Conservatives, especially saying that they were not aware of this. You know, they had seen things during the campaign that suggested that maybe there was some influence, but they thought it was dismissed basically when they raised it. And, you know, it was just very interesting because, you know, talking to senior public servants, they were saying, well, we actually didn't think this was foreign interference, you know, and I'm referring again to any, in particular, the disinformation campaign that was out there on WeChat and other Chinese language social media platforms. So, you know, there's kind of a disconnect here because on one hand, we're having, you know, this account from the Conservatives saying, well, there were some very strange things happening during the 2021 campaign. You know, voters of Chinese origin were fearful of them, did not want to vote for them. They think there was voter suppression. But on the other side, you know, we hear from senior public servants, or we're hearing from the Liberals, and they're saying, well, it was won, you know, this election and elections and all these ridings were won fair and square. And basically all this alleged misinformation on WeChat and Chinese social media, well, that was just, you know, democracy kind of working itself out, right? So there's a big disconnect there. And, you know, it's kind of hard to parse what is the truth here and, you know, what is perception.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, looking at two instances here, and you mentioned their names earlier, we had Kenny Chiu and we had Han Dong. Both of them testified at the inquiry, and I imagine that Chu talked about how essentially he found himself kind of swimming against the current. He had won previously and did fairly well for himself, but then he struggled to win re-election. And then you had Han Dong, who there were questions raised by even Special Rapporteur David Johnston about whether his nomination battle was on the up and up. What did each of those men have to say for themselves in their testimony?
I'll start with Kenny Chiu because, you know, it was really a very emotional testimony. You know, he said he was drowning in misinformation and that, you know, he really had a hard time and he felt like basically everyone knew about it at the senior public servant level. You know, the government knew about it, but it's like they were watching him drown and could only tell him, oh, by the way, you're drowning. So, you know, it was really, and he, you know, he went even further and he said, well, if I had known everything that would happen, I would have never run for public office, you know? So it was a very, very touching moment. You know, he really felt abandoned by his country, basically. That's what he said. But look, with regards to Kenny Chu, so yes, you know, he was criticized because he put forward a bill on to create a foreign agent registry bill. Yes. And that was criticized. You know, there were like some articles on WeChat and others alleging that basically it, you know, if a conservative government was elected, that all Chinese Canadians would have to register under this bill and that basically, you know, WeChat would be banned and, you know, plenty of false things were going on. And so, but and Kenny Chu tried to push back, you know, in Chinese language media, but also in English language media, saying, well, look, that there's disinformation about me. This is, you know, these facts aren't true. And what he was saying, what was really interesting is he was saying that not only was he ignored by, you know, Chinese language media in his community, but there was even one radio station that forbid its radio hosts of talking to him, of even talking about him. And apparently even someone got, I can't remember if it was fired or suspended for mentioning Kenny Chu. So it was like there was something going on, meaning that, you know, people in the Chinese Canadian community in Richmond, BC, was forbidden of even talking about Kenny Chu, and people were slamming the doors in his faces, people who had been faithful to him before, people who knew him well. It's like they were really, really scared of him. And that's also something, by the way, that we've heard from other MPs of Chinese origin. So, you know, Michael Chong said, you know, he's also been targeted and he's received like a threatening email from, you know, what he thinks is the Chinese foreign ministry. Also Jenny Kwan from the NDP, you know, she's also had people in her writing saying that they, you know, they didn't want to be associated with her necessarily because she was critical of the People's Republic of China. So some really interesting, but also very compelling testimony from these MPs. What we've heard from Han Dong, and frankly, I don't think it was a good time for him, but he seemed very confused about what was going on. He had difficulty remembering the facts. You know, he's been kind of out there and trying to restore his reputation for more than a year now. And, you know, it's like he didn't do his homework, or he voluntarily did not want to be too precise about what he knew or what he didn't know. You know, for instance, you know, we were talking about the bus of international students earlier. He said, oh, I had forgotten about that. Actually, my wife reminded me, and he told the inquiry the day before his testimony that his wife had suddenly reminded him that there was a bus of international students that had voted for him in his nomination. So, you know, this was really kind of like information, piecemeal information coming at the last minute. Han Dong, you know, he, in many instances, he said he couldn't recall some specific details about his nomination. And at some point, he had a really testy exchange, I would say, with Michael Chong's lawyer, who asked him straight up, who said, well, do you believe that there is foreign interference in Canada? And Han Dong said, well, I haven't seen any proof of it. I can't say for sure. And, you know, he was forced to admit eventually that it was possible there was foreign interference happening in Canada. And, but, you know, it was really very strange to hear him kind of dismiss this whole public inquiry that is going on and, you know, that is specifically on foreign interference. So that's, you know, kind of how these two testimonies went.
We'll be right back. Now, there's been a lot of talk about China, obviously. Did the inquiry talk about any other countries, or was the focus mostly on Chinese interference?
I would say the focus was mainly on Chinese foreign interference. That was the main subject. What we did find out was that there were actually, so the government was actually monitoring foreign interference from India and Pakistan. We didn't really go into detail as to what exactly might have happened in these two instances, but there were definitely foreign interference attempts in the last two elections from these two countries. We talked very briefly about Russian influence, mainly to say that that was kind of the main concern going into the 2019 election because of whatever had happened in the United States, what had happened in France also. But that after all, you know, there wasn't a lot of proof that there was, that Canada was really a big target for Russia. So, you know, despite all the lawyers' best attempts, so we briefly glossed over all this, but really I would say that the main focus was on China.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, amid all of this testimony, there was kind of the specter hanging over it that eventually we would hear from people in the prime minister's office and the prime minister himself. And that happened in the second week of testimony. First, let's touch on Katie Telford, one of the prime minister's key senior staffers. What did she say about how interference was handled by the PMO or how information was transmitted to her boss?
Yes. So that was a very interesting day because we heard that actually the Prime Minister's office gets, you know, a lot of information that doesn't seem very surprising. I mean, she goes through a lot of the information. The PM himself also gets a lot of briefings, a lot of information. And but basically, we also see that the PMO is also very skeptical of what is coming out of these intelligence agencies like CSIS. And Katie Telford gave the example of so early on in their mandate, in the Liberals' mandate, I guess CSIS had raised some flags about an MP in their caucus. And we don't know who it is. We don't know, you know, what the allegations were, but it seems like Katie Telford actually pushed back against those allegations and said, well, can you substantiate that? You know, is there proof of what you're putting forward? And it looks like they went back, they did their homework, they verified their information, and they suddenly came to the conclusion that they were wrong. So, you know, from that moment, Katie Telford, what she was saying in her testimony was, well, I learned to become very skeptical, basically, of the intelligence sometimes that is presented because, you know, these are allegations. They're not proof. They're not cold, hard facts. So, you know, and she, it's almost as if she was saying, well, like her role was to push back against some of the information that was presented. So, she seemed very skeptical. I mean, people in Trudeau's office seemed very skeptical of sometimes the information that was put forward to them by CSIS, but also other intelligence agencies. And, you know, I know we'll talk about the Prime Minister also, but it's kind of the same line that he was using, right? He was saying, well, in response to that same incident, he said, well, from that point, you know, with these false allegations, we learn to not really necessarily trust CSIS, to be very skeptical of what they bring. And he also said, well, sometimes intelligence agencies don't really understand how politics works. You know, he's talking about buses. He was talking about buses of seniors, international students. He said, well, in my own riding of Papineau in Montreal, I had buses of Greeks and Italians coming to vote for me. So, you know, this isn't unusual. And it's just normal in a nomination process that you will have, you know, certain communities sometimes, or, you know, seniors coming to your nomination, and you just kind of organize some buses to come and bring them to the voting polls. And he said, well, I don't think CSIS understands how it works. You know, this is just a normal course of business. So it's, it was really interesting to see that tension, I think, that exists between the governing party, but also intelligence agencies. But we also, you know, we're starting to understand maybe why some in, you know, supposedly in CSIS or, you know, and maybe another intelligence agency wanted to raise some red flags and actually start leaking some information so that action could be taken.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one of the things about the prime minister through this whole kind of process, even the when there were media reports of election interferences, he seemed to keep taking this line that despite allegations of foreign interference, that the outcome of the election wouldn't have been affected. But he seemed to lean very heavily on the second half of that and seemed less concerned about the first half of that, which is the allegations of foreign interference. Did that kind of tone continue through his testimony, that it's more for him about the end result and less about what kind of may have transpired?
Certainly. I think, you know, everyone kind of agrees that the 2019 and 2021 elections were won by the Liberals, and that foreign interference did not interfere with the overall result of the elections. And to be fair, even a former Conservative leader, Aaron O'Toole, did admit that. He said that, you know, he was hoping to win more ridings when he was leader in 2021, but that overall the Liberals would have won anyways. So I think it's that's a fair assessment. However, that, you know, I think we're really lacking a lot of nuance as to how foreign interference or attempts of it might have influenced certain ridings, especially with large Chinese Canadian populations. And, you know, we're talking about, we talked a lot about Kenny too, but we can talk about other ridings where it seems to have really had an influence. So I think, you know, you're right. There was a lot of emphasis, and not only from the prime minister, but also from senior public servants saying, well, you know, we didn't raise any red flags. We didn't talk about anything that was going on because the elections were free and fair after all. But I think, you know, it really kind of lacks some nuance as to what might have happened in specific ridings if these specific ridings were won fair and square. The Liberals might say that, you know, it was just democracy working out itself. But I think there were some really concerning things that happened. And I think that the goal of this inquiry certainly is to get to the bottom of this. Like I said, There is a lot of information that we were not privy to. I know there were some additional hearings that were held in camera. So really, I think we're just looking forward to the next steps and kind of, you know, getting some sort of answer as to what might have transpired and what are the next steps to prevent another situation like this from happening.
Mm-hmm. And before we kind of get to next steps, I know in addition to your busy couple of weeks covering testimony of the inquiry, you were also at the Canada Strong and Free Conference, formerly known as the Manning Conference. It's a big conservative gathering in Ottawa every year. I do imagine that this topic came up at least once. I understand that Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre made a speech there. What did he have to say about what he heard at the inquiry?
Well, he focused on something very specific that admittedly we did not touch on until now. But so Pierre Poilievre gave his speech at the conference, and essentially before he went on with his planned speech, I would imagine, he went off against the prime minister for not reading all his briefing notes. So that was mentioned during Trudeau's testimony. He was, you know, asked about how he gets intelligence and, you know, does he read all his briefing notes and everything, basically why he wasn't aware of everything that was going on. And Trudeau said, well, look, I read everything I can when I can, but sometimes when there's something really important, I would expect that my national security and intelligence advisor would give me an oral briefing. So I think he, you know, it's fair to say that he prefers it when there's something he should really, really know about, that someone tells him in person, here's what you should know. So really, you know, we saw Pierre Poilievre go on an attack. And, you know, I think this is something that might actually stick, where he'll say, well, the prime minister, as we know, doesn't read his briefing notes. He's not doing his homework. And, you know, he doesn't read anything. So he says he was kept in the dark on some things, but it's because, you know, it's his own fault. He wasn't reading everything that was put on his desk. So that's kind of like the line of attack that we saw from Pierre Poilievre. And, you know, he was just kind of going into jokes about this and kind of saying, well, he might have known about this if only he had read his notes, or, you know, maybe he doesn't read this book or this book. So this was kind of what we were seeing from Pierre Poilievre. But really, on the main issue, I think this is something that will come up. There was actually a panel on foreign interference with Michael Chong on it. So this was certainly something that was discussed at the conference for sure.
And lastly, you know, lots of testimony here. There's been lots of discussion about it for the last couple of years. But what happens now? What does the commission do with the testimony? Are there other avenues of investigation for them, or do they compile a report based on what they heard?
So there are a few steps. The first one is that basically the commissioner, Justice Hoeg, she is expected to table her first report basically on everything we've heard in the past few weeks on May 3rd. So that's coming up quite quickly. I think there's a lot of work to be done on that to kind of compile everything and put everything in one report. And that will focus specifically on the 2019 and the 2021 elections, allegations of foreign interference, etc. But the work is not finished after that, because there is a second part of this inquiry, which is what should the government do basically for the next election? You know, should we have any policy changes? Should we have any changes to the structure? The very complicated structure where, you know, information doesn't always get passed along. So should we lower the threshold of what should be considered a public announcement, things like that. So I think we'll be hearing a bit more about that in the fall. There will be more public hearings at that point. And I expect, you know, a lot of academics to be there. You know, it'll be maybe less explosive, but then we're expecting to hear from Justice Hoeg. She will be tabling her final report at the end of the year, so at the latest December 31st, 2024. So there's still a lot of work ahead. I know the commissioner said that she's expecting to, you know, her team to work 18 to 20 hour days, I think, until the tabling of the first report. So there is certainly a lot of intelligence and a lot of information to go through for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. Definitely a lot of ground to cover for you. I always appreciate you coming on, Catherine. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
10-3 is produced by Sean Knox. Theme music by Bryce Hall. Thanks to my guest, Catherine Levesque. More from her at nationalpost.com. I'm Dave Breckenridge. Thanks for listening.